Hello and welcome to Choose a Phi. Today on the show, we have Adam Cuello, who is the host and executive producer of the Mindful Fire podcast, which is a show that I've been listening to for a while, and I think it's fantastic. It's the intersection of mindfulness and Phi, which I think are two aspects of life that I've been exploring. Certainly, obviously, you know Phi, but mindfulness too, which I've peppered in over the years. It's something that I've explored for years. By no means am I an expert, but I think that's one of the beautiful aspects of mindfulness is it is a journey and it's learning about yourself. It's learning about the practice. And I think what Adam's doing is really fantastic. So a little bit about Adam. He's a father, a husband, entrepreneur, speaker. For the last 12 years, he's actually worked at Google, where in addition to his normal day job, he's taught mindfulness, envisioning, which is something I really want to dive into, and emotional intelligence to over 2,500 Googlers around the world. So he's obviously well versed in this. And I think he's just a member of our community. And I can't wait to dive into this with him. So with that, welcome to Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Adam, welcome to Choose FI. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks so much, Brad. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, this should be fun. It should be a lot of fun. And we have a ton of topics. I don't know if we're going to be able to cover this all in one episode. You sent me this amazing outline for the podcast, and I'm like, wow, this is remarkable. There's so much I want to dive into. So let's just get into it. So you wrote to me, you said, and we were talking about some topics, but you said that led me to bring my passion for mindfulness and fire together to create the Mindful Fire podcast, which explores the intersection of mindfulness and Phi and what it means to craft a life you love now on the path to fire. And that last aspect is so important and just piqued my interest. And I'd love to kick it off just throwing it to you and just saying, hey, what does that look like? What is developing and crafting a life you love now on the path to Phi look like to you?
Yeah, you know, it's a big question and something that I've been looking into with varying degrees of success for many years. At its essence, what I think living mindfully on the path to Phi, or what I call mindful fire, looks like is crafting a life you love and making work optional using the tools of mindfulness, envisioning, and financial independence. And so mindfulness really is all about creating more awareness and choice in your life. It's about getting to know yourself better and, importantly, figuring out what are the stories that I'm telling myself about my life. Envisioning is all about thinking really big about your life, thinking, what do I want in my life? What's important to me? And what's my big vision for my life? Obviously, that plays into Phi because we're trying to get to this point where working is optional and we can do whatever we want. But what's on the other side of that? I think that's what's often missing in people's Phi plan. And it was certainly missing in mine. And then envisioning is also about using the power of our brain, you know, some aspects of our brain to actually make that vision a reality. And the funny thing about envisioning is whether we're aware of it or not, we're doing it all the time because of these particular aspects of our brain. And financial independence, the third tool, is what you talk about all the time on the podcast, right? It's getting your money situation sorted out so you can make work optional and actually live into that vision that you did in the envisioning step.
Interesting. Yeah, and obviously we're quite familiar with the Phi part, but it sounds like this kind of trifecta. Does it start with mindfulness? So I guess let's put ourselves in the shoes of a listener who clearly they understand the tenets of Phi. Okay, and maybe they're just getting started, right? They're making changes, they're taking action to make their life better. And they've heard people on podcasts, people like us or the Tim Ferrisses of the world, talk about the benefits of meditating and mindfulness. And it sounds great, but they're still a little bit dubious, or maybe if they've gotten past that point, they just don't know how to get started. So what do you tell that person? Because I think that you still hear the mocking, oh, this sounds woo-woo, right? Like that's what we all say. Oh, it sounds woo-woo, but blah, blah, blah. There's all this science backing it. And it's sad that we have to still preface it with that it sounds woo-woo. But how do you talk to that person who might be a little skeptical?
Yeah, it's definitely something I hear a lot at Google, especially when teaching this to engineers or people that are very practical and tactical and focused on the science aspect. And that's really what I lead with, right? I lead with the science. And, you know, when I mentioned envisioning, you know, I always lead with the science, right? Because it can be come off as woo-woo if you're just talking about the universe all the time and, you know, just putting things out there. But yeah, to get back to mindfulness really is the foundation of this approach to living and creating a life. And what I tell people is mindfulness is simply being aware, right? It's having a kind, curious awareness of what's going on in your body, in your mind, and in your external environment. It's nothing more than just paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. That's actually the official definition that comes from Jon Kabat-Zinn, who popularized this concept in the West and actually linked it to mainstream medicine through his groundbreaking program in the 70s called mindfulness-based stress reduction. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, you know, there's a lot of evidence to show that this helps. And again, putting all that aside, it's just useful to be aware.
Yeah, I completely agree. The phrase that really jumped out to me was non-judgmentally. Can you dive into that a little bit more?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you called that out, because there are really two parts to the definition of mindfulness, right? Which I'll just say again, is the awareness that arises from paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So there's two parts to that. There's the awareness part, paying attention, and then there is non-judgmentally, which I think of as simply with an attitude of openness, kindness, and curiosity towards yourself and whatever is in your experience, right? It's so important. And for the longest time, I've been meditating, I think I'm coming up on 10 years, and I was so focused on the awareness piece, I would be sitting, focusing on my breath, my mind would wander, I'd bring it back. My mind would wander, I'd bring it back. My mind would wander, I'd bring it back. And it was almost like a boot camp style of training. And, you know, there's value in that. But once I started bringing in this non-judgment piece of not judging myself when my mind wandered, not making that into a problem, and coming with a kind, curious attitude towards myself and what was going on in my head, which is, you know, as anyone who's tried meditating can relate to, it's crazy up there. You know, there's thoughts going all which ways. But the more I brought that in, the easier and more enjoyable the practice became. And that translated into my life as well, right? Because those thoughts don't stop once you get off the cushion.
No, they certainly do not. You have that little inner voice talking, I guess, 16 waking hours a day. And yeah, it's funny because I think, right, we all, as I like to say, we're all the stars of our own movie, right? Like the world literally revolves around ourselves, to ourselves. And you don't know, I hate to use the word normal, but like, is this inner voice normal? Is it quote unquote normal when, hey, I understand I want to get started meditating. And I hear you. And I'm almost envisioning myself where, and not to use the word envisioning in that sense, but when I would use the Headspace app, which I think is fantastic and a great way to get started for people who know nothing about meditation, certainly. But it was always just that come back to your breath. And yeah, similar to you, for me, it was, man, why is my attention span 7 seconds, right? Or 4 seconds? Why can I not stop these thoughts? So then, recovering type A people, you get into the, I'm doing this wrong. I'm no good at this. This is a waste of time. How could it be valuable? Like that entire running string of, what am I even doing here? Am I wasting everyone's time? But I guess A, that's normal, right? And B, that non-judgmental aspect, I think is the key that I was missing based on what you're talking about. Because that's enlightening to me.
Yeah. And that is absolutely the experience I would say 95% of people have. It was certainly the experience I had when I started meditating. I gave it a shot and I was convinced that I was doing it wrong. I even did a 10-day meditation retreat, one of those silent meditation retreats. Yeah. I spent 9.5 days thinking I was doing it wrong and not realizing that those thoughts were just thoughts. Yeah. And so what I'll say is, you know, for anyone started, you certainly don't need to do any sort of retreat. But if you sit down to meditate, I find it's super helpful to expect the thoughts to come, to know that they're going to come. And that changes the dynamic, right? If you're expecting your mind to be clear and calm and serene, and, you know, like all the magazines and, you know, pundits are talking about, mindfulness will solve all your problems and you need to have a clear mind and have no thoughts. If you're expecting that, you're in for a world of hurt. But if you sit down expecting your mind to wander constantly, when it happens, it's no big deal. And so for me, what's been really helpful is I sit down, I expect my mind to wander, and sometimes I even feel excited when I notice my mind wander, because in essence, that is the practice. The practice is noticing what's on your mind in awareness and then choosing to come back to your breath and start again. Over and over again, returning to the breath. Each time you notice, it's like doing a bicep curl for your brain. And when I teach meditation, I don't describe it as some mystical or magical thing. It's just mental training. It's like doing exercise for your brain. And so when your mind wanders and you notice it, that is like doing a bicep curl for your mental muscles of attention and meta-attention, which is the attention of attention, or the ability to know that your mind has wandered.
Interesting.
Each time that happens, you are strengthening those muscles and making it so that you can continue holding your attention and your focus for longer periods of time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that I had never crossed my plate. So, I mean, that makes a ton of sense just to even be aware that you're losing this. So, Adam, you said something in there that I thought was really intriguing. And I don't know precisely what you meant. I'd love for you to expand on it. The thoughts are just your thoughts, right? You were on this meditation retreat. The thoughts are just your thoughts. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm glad you picked up on that. And this is a really important part about the practice. Thoughts are simply mental events. Our mind creates thoughts, just like our sweat glands create sweat, our saliva glands create saliva, our minds create thoughts. Thoughts are simply mental events. And so if you can relate to them as such, they lose their power. Where we run into trouble is when we get caught up in our thoughts and we start to believe them, right? And you know, you mentioned at the beginning with your experience of trying to meditate and thinking you were doing it wrong, and that whole story starts spinning out, just like it did for me on that meditation retreat. It feels like, no, this is a different type of thought. This matters. If I pay attention to this one, then I'm going to figure it out, and then I'll be doing it right. And if we can kind of create a little separation from those thoughts and kind of watch them, like an analogy I often use is, you know, imagine you're sitting on the bank of a river and you're watching the boats go by, right? You're not trying to grab onto the boat. You're not trying to push away the boat. You're just watching them go by. That's the kind of relationship we want to have with our thoughts. We just want to watch them arise, stay for a moment and pass away. And that changes the experience to be a little bit more easeful.
So, right. So it's not about stopping these thoughts necessarily. It's about just understanding that they're there, noticing them. And like you said, just letting them kind of float on by. That's an interesting look. So thoughts are mental events, right? That's you said, and they're not reality. They exist inside your head. And that's, I think it's so important because again, like I said, we're the star of our own movies. To us, those thoughts are everything, but it's almost like looking at an event in reality, and truly how we frame that determines the reality to us, which is crazy when you think about it, right? It is the same objective happening, but yet how you interact with it mentally is the outlook that you have. I know that's kind of a little abstract, but I think it's really important. And like for me, it ties into anxiety issues that I've had. I know things that I've spoken about with with my daughters and just trying, like, I'm always trying to pepper in lessons to them and just all aspects of life. And also trying to make sure that they understand that, like, I'm a real person who's not just some, like, oh, dad mythical figure, that, like, I have struggles. And anxiety is certainly one of them. And for me, it's, okay, my brain is trying to keep me safe. My brain is looking at the future and trying so hard to keep me safe, but it's actually producing negative reality in the moment for a fictional outcome, which is actually really interesting. And the intersection, I think, between that type of anxiety, which many of us face, right? And the benefits of this mindfulness that you're talking about, of this awareness, of seeing these thoughts float down the river, like, there is a massive intersection there that I think can be really valuable for a lot of people.
I totally agree. You're absolutely right. There's a huge epidemic of anxiety and depression, especially among teenagers and young people. And so it's really important that, you know, yesterday was Mental Health Awareness Day, right? Like, this is such an important topic. And it is so important to remember that what we pay attention to creates our reality, right? That's essentially what you're saying right there. Our thoughts and what thoughts we pay attention to create our reality. And so if we change the way we relate to them with mindfulness, which is just, again, a kind, curious awareness, oh, there's that thought. Oh, there's that story again. Okay. The thing that has been super helpful for me is one question. When I notice myself being caught up in a story or in a thought that is not particularly positive, as often they are when the inner critic is talking in our head, is this useful? I can simply pause and ask the question, is this useful? If it's not useful, I can just let it go. I can let it float down the river, and it may come up 5 minutes from now, but I can again ask, is this useful? And I can just let it go. And just that little pause and that question takes away the power and reminds me, this isn't the truth. This is just a thought, a mental event happening in my mind.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. And Adam, I've always been curious how one would describe, like, the difference between mindfulness and meditation. Is there, like, an actual formal definition, like a difference? How do you look at that?
Yeah, it's another good one, because the two often get lumped together. The way I describe it is mindfulness is a capacity that we all have to varying degree. We can be aware, and we can be aware with kindness. So it's a capacity that we have and we can strengthen and we can practice more and more in our moments. Meditation is the actual mental training of our mind and particular faculties of mind. And so you can do mindfulness meditation, which trains the faculty of mindfulness, or you can do a body scan, for instance, which is a meditation that trains bodily awareness. Or you can do a loving kindness meditation, which trains the capacity for compassion and empathy. So you can think of meditation like exercise. There are all different types of exercise that train different parts of your body or capacities of your body. And mindfulness is one of those capacities that you can train and strengthen.
Yeah, I like that. I like that concept of, right, there's all different types of exercises. There's all different types of meditation, I guess, that can train different aspects of mindfulness. Okay, that is a framework that makes sense to me. And there truly are all different types, right? I mean, I've heard of walking meditations, of, right, just being aware of your surroundings. I think about, like, the walks that I take, and almost invariably, I have my stupid phone and I'm playing a podcast and I'm just, like, I'm not aware of my surroundings. I'm assuming that can even be, like, I'm looking for the gateway for somebody to get started. Like, could just leaving your phone at home, taking a walk, and just observing, like, is that a potential gateway for mindfulness?
Sure. Yeah. It's really just being aware, right? So you can be aware. You can be aware of anything. You can be aware while you're washing the dishes. You can be aware while you're brushing your teeth. You can be aware while you're walking. Certainly mindful walking is a posture of meditation. You know, you just kind of walk and you feel the muscles in your legs. You feel the contact of the floor on your feet. They're all different types. But to get very, you know, to come with some actionable tips, here's what I would suggest. Sit down, close your eyes if you want, and just focus on your breath. Feel as you breathe in, feel as you breathe out, and just observe. What does it feel like to breathe? Then, of course, your mind will wander. Notice that with kindness. Oh, my mind has wandered. I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for lunch or whatever it is. Notice it with kindness. Gently bring your attention back. Start again. And just repeat that process. Set a timer for 2 minutes. And that is all you need, right? The things that, you know, I know you guys had James Clear on the podcast. His book, Atomic Habits, is fantastic. And he has a couple of tips. Start small and build from there. You know, meditation or mindfulness are not one of those things that you need to go big on to get benefit. You can literally start with 2 minutes and do it every day, and it will change your life. And then from there, once you start to feel the flow of it, you can start to expand.
Yeah, that's great. And it's funny because as you said the 2 minutes, I immediately thought of James Clear. So it's incredible that you brought him up right after, because when you're trying to create habits just in life, yeah, just making it easy, making it obvious, making it small. These are tactics that can really help. You know, he talks about going to the gym and just like physically showing up at the gym that first day, not even doing anything, turning around and leaving, just to start ingraining the habits. And I mean, that's kind of a little kooky one, I think. But this 2 minutes of just being aware of your breath. And it's funny, Adam, because even as you were going through it, my kind of, again, recovering type A brain is like, oh, he breathed out through his mouth. Should I be doing this in through my nose, out through my nose? Like, and I'm saying that kind of jokingly, kind of not. But the beautiful part is it's just about the awareness, right? So maybe that could have been part of my awareness as I was doing it, that, oh, interesting. I naturally breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth. Or, oh, it's uncomfortable when I do it that way or whatever. So it's not about getting this right. There's no right. There's no winning at this. It is just about the awareness. And that is so critical.
Exactly. And you have the awareness that your mind went to that thought. Your mind went to the thought of, okay, he was breathing through his mouth. That's the right way to do it, right? So that's awareness too. You know, and the James Clear stuff makes a ton of sense. I've recently started going to the gym because my son started up at school again. So I'm just getting in the gym. I'm walking in that door every day after I drop him off. On most of the days that I can, I'm going through that door, and that's what I'm trying to do. So that brings up another point that James Clear talks about, which is tie it to an existing habit, right? Start small, tie it to an existing habit. So when you put your feet on the floor as you get out of the bed, or after you brush your teeth, or if you do go to the gym or work out, after your workout, just take a minute or two to breathe in, breathe out, and know you're breathing in and breathing out. And then the other things we talked about before, expect your mind to wander. It's going to happen. And just bring that kind, curious awareness and you're good to go.
Yeah, I like that. So I think clearly for me, this sounds like just the easiest gateway possible is just lay in your bed and breathe for a few minutes, set that timer, whatever it may be. Or like you said, do it after you exercise or some such. But are there maybe more like slightly structured ways that you would recommend? And I hate the word recommend, but are there gateways to get into meditation? I mentioned the Headspace app. There's an app called Calm, which is another. Those are probably, at least to my knowledge, the two biggest and most popular of the apps. And they have simple, like maybe like a 10-day, 10 minutes a day thing, which was always like the on-ramp that I use, but that was years ago. I'm curious if that's where you would suggest somebody start, or if you have maybe some better options.
Yeah, those are great options. You know, they're a great onboarding experience. The issue I have with those, you know, especially for people in the FI space, is they cost money, right? They're free to start, but if you want to go further, it costs some money. There's another great app called Insight Timer. You know, I kind of think of it as like the YouTube of meditation. Certainly YouTube has plenty of meditations as well. But Insight Timer is great because that's what I use. I just set a timer. I have a bell go off every minute. So even if my mind's wandering the whole minute, I have that bell as a reminder to come back. But there's also guided ones on there. And then, you know, I have a ton of guided meditations completely free on my podcast, which you can search for the Mindful Fire podcast in your podcast player, wherever you're listening to this. And there's tons there, including a getting started one, various different types. And then I'm also going to put together a page for the audience at mindfulfire.org/choosefi, where I'll put a very short guided meditation for people to get started with.
Oh, man.
I'll make it 2 or 3 minutes, and it's something you can do every day. And it brings up a good point, because guided meditation is the gateway. It's very daunting to sit down and just breathe like I talked about. But if you don't have anything, or you want to take, you just feel like you want to have a moment, that's super useful. But guided meditations are very helpful to get started and just, you know that you're doing it right, so to speak. Right. It kind of satisfies that urge to want to do it right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at that URL, I'll definitely put up a short one for people to get started with.
That is fantastic. And yeah, we'll have that in the show notes. But again, right, mindfulfire.org/choosify. That's awesome. You put that together. I didn't realize you were doing that. So yeah, that's really, really great. And yeah, there's all sorts of different meditations. I know I've talked about one that I used called Yoga Nidra. For anybody who listens to the Huberman Lab podcast, which is one of the 50 biggest podcasts in the whole world, and just a fantastic show. So Andrew is a professor of neurobiology, I believe, at Stanford University, and he has talked for years about this non-sleep deep rest, he calls it, and it's essentially this yoga nidra. I'll put this in the show notes as well. It's not yoga, like actual yoga. It's just the name of this type of meditation. I find that, to me, this 10 minutes that I do is like just the best 10 minutes of my day. It's almost akin to like an hour of sleep. So Adam, this might not be the traditional meditation by any means, but I find that it's super useful. And I think that might be one of my takeaways, is I've explored a lot of these different things, like the metta, the loving kindness, or maybe the visualization of, oh, you have a sunlight peeking on you and then it's spreading. Like, for some reason, my brain, and I'm not scoffing at that at all, because I think it's wonderful. My brain just can't see it. So like, I get a little more frustrated in myself. But when I found this yoga nidra, I just almost like fell in love with it. It was remarkable. And it just was the perfect thing for me. So I think maybe that's a takeaway for people, is explore, you know, download a Headspace, listen to all your meditations on the Mindful Fire podcast feed, and just see what resonates with you. And maybe even just keep coming back to either that particular meditation or that type of meditation as well. I understand it's probably not getting all the muscles if we're going back to the, that kind of analogy. But I think if you're looking for a way to start and just build this habit, I think there's potentially value there.
Yeah. You know, I think it really is, find something that works for you, start small and do it consistently, and then expand from there, right? You don't have to hit all the muscles. You don't have to do everything. And in fact, you can't do everything. So you might as well just pick something and start with it.
Yeah, agreed. So, hey, I wanted to get into real quick the science. So for people who are dubious, and I know you talked to potentially dubious Google engineers, you talked earlier, okay, I start with the science. I lead with the science. Just give me this super quick overview of the science, because I mean, we could get bogged down in detail, but like, how do you give that high level pitch of, this isn't just woo-woo. There is real science here.
Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly, I get a lot of questions about this when I teach this at Google. And so I lead with, there's a growing amount of research that shows that there are health benefits, mental health benefits to practicing this, including lower depression, lower stress, and greater well-being. And if you want to go deep into those studies, I would recommend reading a book called Altered Traits by Richie Davidson. Richie Davidson at the University of Wisconsin is the leading, what they call, contemplative neuroscientist. And so he really studies and has been doing it for 20 or 30 years, what the effect of mindfulness and meditation is on the brain. So that's one thing. The other thing I'll say is, really, this comes down to what's called neuroplasticity. And for those who aren't familiar with this concept, this is the idea that your brain is constantly changing based on your experience. It's the idea that everything you think, feel, and pay attention to changes the structure and function of your brain. And, you know, the science used to think that our brain was fixed after a certain age, but now we know that our brain is constantly rewiring based on what we pay attention to. And so, by practicing meditation, we are strengthening, as I said earlier, the mental muscles of attention and meta-attention. And those changes are happening through neuroplasticity. So let's just take an example of learning to play the guitar, right? At first, when you learn to play the guitar, everything is completely uncomfortable and unnatural. The sounds are foreign, the finger movements are difficult, and the whole thing just feels totally unnatural. But as you practice more and more, all of those things, the finger movements, the sound, being able to read music, all those things become easier. And that's because the brain circuitry, the neural networks associated with those skills become well-worn paths. And so this is how we learn anything. And so practicing meditation allows us to strengthen those, the circuitry associated with attention, and makes all of that easier. And so to talk about a specific benefit of it is concentration, because the longer we can keep our attention fixed on an object and the more we can realize it when it wanders and bring it back more quickly, that creates the effect of continuous attention, which is concentration. And so by training these mental muscles through practicing meditation and the changes happening with neuroplasticity, we become better able to focus and concentrate for longer periods of time.
Yeah, that's so compelling, especially nowadays, right? And I hate to be like the old guy who back in my day, but I mean, realistically, I've noticed this with my own attention span in terms of my phone and the computer. And even when I'm doing what I think of as like, oh, I'm doing deep work, or I'm writing my email that goes out on Tuesday, my email newsletter, even though I'm in deep work, I almost invariably, like my brain just, boom, I need to check my email or I need to do this. It's like my attention span is so much shorter than it used to be. And it's just, it's odd. Like even like reading is something that like I truly love doing, but I don't think that I have the attention span that I used to. And I think just being aware of that has been helpful. Like I've actually noticed that I've been more cognizant of it recently. And just that awareness, and this goes back to what we were talking about before, like just that awareness has helped me. And then there are ways to potentially, let's say, because I'm aware of it, I'm closing down tabs on my browser. Because again, almost like a James Clear thing, it's easy when you make it more difficult to do the wrong habit, in essence. Well, then it happens much less often, right? Like when you make it more difficult. So just that awareness. But I think that's not the end game necessarily. It's, okay, how can I practice this attention? And I love that that is a huge value. And I think just kind of final word for me, and I'm curious if you have any examples of organizations. I think what I usually do in life is I look for sources of information that I trust. And when I see multiple corroborating sources in completely varying and disparate fields, then it means something to me. And I think there's precedent for the armed forces and Navy SEALs and professional sports and just all sorts of people operating at a high level, but in completely different fields, starting to move more towards mindfulness and meditation. I'm curious if you have any examples just off the top of your head.
Certainly, Brad. There are many organizations, sports teams, and individuals using mindfulness to operate at a higher level of performance. And the researcher that comes to mind is a researcher at the University of Miami named Amishi Jha, and she studies attention. She recently wrote a book called Peak Mind, and this is about her experience teaching this in the armed forces to help high-level military teams work better together, have higher performance, and lower stress, because obviously they're in a very stressful situation. So she likes to do this work at kind of the cutting edge and high stress environments.
Yeah, that's cool. And obviously not to mention organizations like Google are doing this, right? Because the person I'm talking to is training thousands of Googlers all across the world. I know there's a guy named Mark Devine, who's a former Navy SEAL, who has a website I haven't gone to in years, so to be fair, but called SEAL Fit. And he does all different types of meditation and different types of breathing, which is interesting. Like, I think there's a large intersection here. And I think that's what I'm trying to get across is like, there's no one right answer. This is a practice of just being more mindful and aware. And if that means, box breathing like the Navy SEALs do, if it means using, I have an app that I was testing called Othership, which is based on, there are hundreds of different types of breathing, I guess meditations we'll call them. And some of them land for me and some of them just don't. And like, that is what I'm doing here at this point in my journey, Adam, is I'm exploring and I find that fun and it's interesting, but then I keep coming back to when I find the ones that I really like and I know, oh, that one, when I have 5 minutes, I listen to that 1 5-minute breathing on Othership and it's just wonderful and it just calms me down and gets me from maybe fight or flight into a parasympathetic state and I just feel good. Anyway, I want to kind of transition into the aspect that is fascinating to me that I've really never heard anyone use this term so overtly as you did, which is envisioning. So that's clearly like one of the major tenets of what you're talking about in terms of this intersection, right, of phi, of mindfulness, and of envisioning. And you said to me that it's not magic here. It's taking advantage of the predictive nature of our brain. And I've talked about this a lot, like the reticular activating system, which is when basically like you go out and buy a car. You know, I just bought a red Kia. And then all of a sudden you see dozens or hundreds of red Kias that you've never noticed before, right? Like your brain is finding these things and that predictive nature of our brain. And finally, just another quote you used here, which was, on the other hand, when I told myself the world is abundant with opportunity, I started seeing opportunity everywhere. And that is super powerful. And I think it just kind of highlights both of these things, or maybe all three that I brought up, highlights how powerful our brains truly can be. And I would love for you to dive into this envisioning.
Yeah, envisioning has been a growing area of interest for me over the last several years, because it is just amazing how powerful our brains truly are. So I mentioned earlier that we are envisioning all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. And that's because what we pay attention to creates our reality, right? And so let's just talk for a moment about the aspects of our brain that are making this happen, and then get into like how we can use that for good or bad. So we already talked about the first aspect, which is neuroplasticity. The idea that what we pay attention to changes the structure and function of our brain. The second aspect of our brain that I want you to know about is the fact that our brains are predictive in nature. A researcher named Regina Pali at the University of California, Riverside, published an article called The Predicting Brain. And in it, she wrote that even before events happen, our brain makes a prediction of what is most likely to happen and sets in motion the thoughts, perceptions, emotions, and even physiological responses for what is expected. She goes on to say, in a sense, we learn from the past what to predict for the future, and then we live the future we expect. And so the way I think about this is we're telling ourselves stories about how our life is going to be, and then we're acting out those stories. You gave a perfect example of the car, right? Getting a new car and suddenly that car is everywhere. I use that analogy all the time. Another one is my wife was recently pregnant. We just had our second baby.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. And guess what? Pregnant women were everywhere. You know, it's like, where'd all these pregnant women come from? Right. Like, turns out I was just more ready to see them because that was my experience. And so when you put these things together, the neuroplasticity and the predicting brain, our predicting brain is using our previous experience, which is all encoded in the neuroplasticity, to predict what's going to happen in the future. And here's the thing. I said, we're doing this all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. And unfortunately for me, I actually envisioned myself right out of my dream job and came within 30 days of getting fired from Google as a result. And so we're doing it whether we're aware of it or not. But when we bring mindfulness into the picture, we can become aware of the stories that we're telling ourselves and ask, is this useful? If it's not useful, we can choose a new story and practice that story, which will then create the neuroplasticity of that story and start predicting what we want to see rather than just the unconscious stories that we're telling ourselves all the time. And that's how we bring this into the mindful fire approach, where we think really big about our life, we get clear on the vision we want, and we start to practice that vision. So we start to predict and see those experiences and things associated with that vision in our day-to-day experience.
Okay, this is super deep, and I think we definitely need to dive more into this. So obviously, the intersection of this envisioning and Phi, but I cannot let it go by that you envision yourself right out of it, nearly envision yourself right out of a dream job. Obviously, we're talking about predictive nature, so I kind of see the punchline here, but clearly, we're also talking about the potential value of envisioning. So, okay, what, there's no other way to say it other than what the heck happened?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. You know, I got very close.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
So what happened was I was a few years into working at my dream job at my dream company, right? I'm working for Google. I'm living in California. I'm eating the free lunch. I'm loving it.
It's the ping pong tables. Come on.
I'm playing the ping pong, you know, the whole thing. And that's great. But my ultimate dream is to be an entrepreneur. I had a startup before Google, and I thought I'd go out to California. I'll work a couple years at Google because I got this opportunity, but then I'll transition into doing my own thing. And so that was always in the back of my mind. And so while there was a lot about my job that I loved, there was this feeling in the back of my mind that there's got to be more, right? Mm. And I call this the if only mindset. If only I could be an entrepreneur. If only I could start my own company. If only I reach financial independence. If only I retire early. Then everything will be fine and I'll be happy. And I found through practicing mindfulness and looking at my, you know, the story in my head, I noticed that story over and over again. I still notice it. And I think a lot of people in the Phi community are feeling that. If only I get to Phi, then everything will be great. And the reality is we need to turn inward and really get to know ourselves. It's not out there, right? Every time I got to that thing, there was just another thing. Every time I got to that if only, there was always something else. And a big lesson I've had this year is realizing that everything I say I want or need to be happy, I already have if I'm willing to look and pay attention in a slightly different way. Or if I don't have it, I can pretty easily get it by going and getting it, right? And so it's not out there, it's in here. And that's what I'm trying to come back to again and again in my life.
Yeah, that. So it's not out there, it's in here. Man, that in and of itself, that's worth the price of admission for the podcast today, I think, right? That's incredible. And it strikes me that I think people in the Phi community are trying to think about this. And I think maybe we can be a little bit more overt about, especially like everything I need to be happy, I already have. And it reminds me, though it's not a direct one-to-one analog, but like Scott and Taylor Rickens from the Playing with Fire documentary, and we just had them on just a couple months ago. And the thing that Scott did when he was trying to get Taylor on board in terms of pursuing a path to Phi was, what are the things that make you happy on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, basically? And it was interesting that like you said, everything I need to be happy, I already have. And obviously, you're talking mostly internally, right? But she was talking, and they ultimately realized it was all the little things. It wasn't things that cost money that would make you appear rich to your friends and family or anything like that. It wasn't outward signs. It was spending time with family and friends. It was playing board games. It was drinking a glass of wine, which was kind of superfluous, but like drinking a glass of wine with my husband or my spouse and spending time together or seeing my daughter smile. Like, not only does it not have to be big things, but it very rarely is a big thing or a set of big things that makes you happy. I think an exercise like that is really, really valuable. Again, I know that's not directly what you're talking about, but I think an exercise like that is super valuable. And maybe in conjunction with the it's not out there, it's in here as like a second exercise, potentially. I'd be curious your thoughts on it.
No, I totally agree. That was the big realization. It's like, oh, I want all these things. And I, you know, it is helpful to think big about our life. And that is what I definitely advocate when I talk about envisioning, and I'm going to put an envisioning guide on that same page we talked about. You know, I have a three-question envisioning guide to kind of think big about your life. And that's useful because we often put so many limitations on our life that we don't do it. But to your point, it is often the small things, right? And you may think big about your life and realize like, wow, like it's not that different from this. And I have everything I need. And so that when you remind yourself over and over again that you have everything you need, it's just a recipe for contentment. And for me, I was always telling myself, you know, back to this only mindset, if only I could teach mindfulness and get paid for it. If only I could be an entrepreneur. If only I could be a thought leader, right? I like, these are things I would say to myself and I would say to, you know, friends. And then it's just when I shift my attention or I get the perspective of someone else, I teach mindfulness at Google and get paid for it. Probably more than I'd get paid if I was a professional mindfulness teacher too. I also am an entrepreneur and I'm a thought leader because I have a podcast with probably 100 episodes by now, right? So it's like, I'm already doing these things. And if I pay attention to that rather than what I don't have, I'll get more of that because of the predicting brain.
Yeah, that's super cool. And it's funny, I don't think I've ever mentioned this in the podcast, but in our household, in the Barrett household, the joke is that I am like the luckiest person in the world. Just like good things seem to happen to me all the time. Or like, just again, jokingly, in a board game or in a whatever, like the luck always comes to me. But it's interesting because I think it truly is that what we're noticing, because now we have this idea in our head and it's that reticular activating system. Nobody notices when daddy, the lucky one, gets unlucky. But when I do get some kind of crazy luck, we all notice it. And this is but a tiny, tiny, tiny little example. That's kind of a silly example, but I actually do think of myself as a lucky person. And I think on some level, I've created the luck surface area, which is what I like to call that, that enables me to have some positive things happen in my life, lucky or not. But I think almost similar to how you've talked about in your podcast and you wrote up is you can essentially choose to look at life because, again, it's all in your head, right? So you can choose to look at it as I'm an unlucky person, bad things are always befalling me, or I'm a lucky person. Which is going to serve you better, right? Like you can look at a situation and say, oh, poor me, grumble, 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 or, oh, wow, here's the lesson I can learn from that and what I'm going to take from it. It's the same objective reality, but it's how you choose to look at it. And again, with that predictive power of the brain, with this reticular activating system, like, man, our brains are super powerful. And I think in my own lived experience, there is something there in terms of not being silly in the manner of just like only positive, because that's not necessarily me, but just looking for the positive is just a huge life hack, if you will.
Totally. I agree completely. And, you know, I often use this analogy when we're talking about the predicting brain and the neuroplasticity of planting seeds. And, you know, each time we think a thought, it's like we're planting or watering a seed, and we can choose the seeds we plant, right? We have some that we're just watering out of habit because we're unaware. Mindfulness allows us to see the seeds that we're planting and choose different ones. So you can choose to see yourself as a lucky person, or you can choose to see yourself as an unlucky person. And whatever you pay attention to are the seeds that you're watering and will be the result that you see out in your experience because of the predicting nature of the brain. And so what envisioning is all about is choosing what story you want to tell yourself, so to speak, or what seeds you want to plant to get you where you want to go. So the idea is you think about a big vision for your life by putting all of your preconceived ideas of what's possible to the side. You think very big, and then you think about what seeds can I plant? What mindsets can I practice through visualization or affirmations or journaling that will plant those seeds in my mind and make it more likely to move me in that direction?
Yeah, that's cool. So visualizations, journaling, affirmations, those are, again, like just actionable ways. And of course, you're going to have a ton of information on that landing page, which is really super cool. Like, and so, right, you start and you dream big. And I think that's maybe like the last word on this is how it intersects with FI. And like, okay, how could I use this envisioning? Like, what does my life look like when I reach FI? Like, So you start maybe high level, but do you get down into the micro, or is it more of like a feeling? I'd love to just hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So what I recommend is you sit down, you grab a pen and paper, and you write stream of consciousness. Whatever comes to mind, you just get it on the paper. What does my life look like 5 years from now if everything in my life starting today went better than I could even dream of? And that's how you put aside those limitations. You think really, really big. What does that look like? And yeah, you answer, what does my day look like? What am I doing? Who am I with? Where am I? And then importantly, you mentioned this, how do I feel, right? When I think about my vision in the future, one big aspect is I'm feeling unrushed, right? I want to feel unrushed because a lot of the stress in my life comes from when I'm feeling rushed. I want to feel unrushed. So how do you feel in this life? And the key here, and this will all be in the envisioning guide, write in the present tense as if you're sitting at your kitchen table 5 years from now, or you can do this at any time frame that you want. You could say, when I reach phi, you're sitting there, you just had a day of your phi life or your life 5 years from now. What does it look like? Write it in the present tense as if you're describing the day that just happened. And that kind of plants the seeds in your mind like it's already happened. And so our brain doesn't know the difference if it's reality or not, because like you said before, with anxiety, we make up all sorts of situations that never happen. So we might as well use that to our advantage.
Oh, that is super cool. Adam, this is amazing. I really, really, really appreciate it. This has been a deep dive for me. Obviously, I got to ask a ton of questions that I've always been curious about. And from listening to your podcast, I've gotten much more acclimated to this concept of envisioning, which to me is the most unique aspect of what you're talking about and the most powerful. So obviously everybody will have their own personal takeaways, but that to me is something truly different. And yeah, I really implore everyone listening to this to go check out that envisioning guide that you're so kind to offer. So again, it's mindfulfire.org/choosefi. And obviously it goes without saying, these are free downloads. So please take advantage of it. Adam's podcast is fantastic, Mindful Fire. So Adam, we're definitely going to tackle the hot seat if you're up for it, but is there any way, any kind of last words or ways that people could get in touch with you that you'd recommend?
Absolutely. So I would say the best way is to go to mindfulfire.org/choosefi. As you said, there I'll have all the things we talked about today, my favorite episodes, that 2-minute guided meditation, and a way to get in contact with me. I've been getting really active on LinkedIn, sharing content, and I'd love for you to connect with me and send me a message. But you can find all of that and my free envisioning guide at mindfulfire.org/choosefi.
Wonderful. That's awesome. Adam, really appreciate it. Let's hop into the hot seat. I know you're a longtime listener, so we're bringing it back here.
And Brad, so before we jump into the hot seat, I know you don't like to leave open loops on the podcast, and I did drop the fact that I almost got fired from Google by envisioning myself out of a job. So I did want to touch
right
on that story.
Oh my goodness, I would have not closed that loop. So okay, yeah, definitely finish that story.
Okay, so I was working at Google. I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I had this story that I was telling myself. So I was working at Google, but I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I was in this entrepreneur program at this time, an online program that promised to help you build a SaaS company, a software business in 6 months. And so I had it in my head that I was going to build a business. This was the time I was going to be an entrepreneur. And I had this story, leaving Google meant success. Huh. To be successful meant to leave Google, to quit Google, really. And I took it a step further and I said, if I get promoted at Google again, that means I have failed. Obviously, there's are quite ridiculous things to tell myself. And in hindsight, I realized that. But in the moment, I was like, I'm training my mindset. I'm doing this. It's going to happen. So I was on this experimental team at Google. Should have been my dream job. Had been trying to make it for years. And turns out I envisioned myself into this job. And then because of these mindsets that I was telling myself, every day I'd wake up at 5 a.m. and I was trying to build this business on the side. Then I'd go to work on this team, this experimental team. And 9 months into the job, I get called into my boss's office. And he says, Adam, we're eliminating the team and you have a few months to find a new job or leave Google. I was obviously pretty upset. I was shocked, but I had to find a new job. And so I started interviewing, I started talking to people, and I had many great interviews, late stage interviews, internal, external. But when I got to 30 days before the deadline, looking right at the possibility of getting fired from Google, I had a total of zero job offers. And I started freaking out a little bit more.
Yeah, understandably.
Yeah. And I realized, you know what? Something's got to change. What I'm doing is not working. And I realized the mindset that I'm having is not working for me. And so I remembered back to this idea of envisioning that I had learned in this program, Search Inside Yourself, which I took at Google. It's a mindfulness, emotional intelligence course where I learned envisioning. I thought, okay, well, this isn't working. I might as well give this a try. What does my ideal situation look like? Okay, I have a job at Google, working on a team that I love with people that I respect, and I'm having fun. Okay. And then I said, okay, I remembered another practice, the affirmations practice I mentioned. And what are the beliefs that I want to have? What are the seeds that I want to plant as I work in try to get this vision? And I said, the world is abundant with opportunity, and I don't worry about doing things right or wrong. I just take action, which leads to learning, progress, and growth. These are the two beliefs that I was practicing. So the way I would do it practically is I'd sit and I meditate, and then I would say each of these beliefs. The world is abundant with opportunity. And I would visualize, how is that true in the past? How is that true in the present? And how is that true in the future? And as I did that over this 30 days, amazing things started to happen. I started to see opportunity everywhere in my experience. I had friends reaching out to me saying, you should talk to this company, or my team has headcount, come apply. And I started to take action that I wouldn't otherwise take. So I saw on LinkedIn, I was connected with this company by the CEO of another company I used to work with. And I just asked for an introduction. And next thing you know, I'm being recommended to the hiring manager by the CEO. So I started to take these actions, and 30 days go by. And I end that 30 days, instead of getting fired from Google, I end up with two job offers, one internal and one external. Huh. And I took the internal one, still working at Google. And that was such an eye-opener for me, because the same thing that got me into it, as I look back, the same thing that got me into it, envisioning that I need to quit Google and success means quitting Google, I effectively envisioned myself right out of a job. Yeah. I got what I wanted. I asked to lose my job, and I got losing my job. But the powerful thing here is the same thing that got me into it is what got me out of it. And I've since used envisioning in all kinds of ways, from this house that I'm living in and becoming a facilitator of that Search Inside Yourself program. And really this whole thing with Mindful Fire, the podcast, this area of interest for me, and you know what I see as kind of the future of my post-FI career, all came out of this really, really dark moment because I realized the power of this concept of envisioning. So it's been really a wild ride, and I'm glad to be on the other side of it.
Yeah, that is quite a wild ride. And yeah, for you to live this so overtly in your actual life, right? Like, it's easy to talk about something, but I mean, you've seen both the good and the bad of that. So that's neat. Well, thank you for closing the loop. I would have been kicking myself on that. So thanks, Adam. And yeah, let's get into the hot seat.
Let's do it.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Adam, question number one. So previously, I would say your favorite podcast, blog, or book, and I feel like that was a little too much pressure. So you could take it that way if you want, or maybe something new, a podcast, blog, book, whatever article that you've enjoyed recently that you think the audience would get value from.
So a podcast I've really been loving recently is All the Hacks. I know you're friends with Chris Hutchins, and you know it's funny that he now has a podcast where he shares all this stuff. Because I remember a long time ago, he was on your podcast and he shared this idea about how he created a fake Peloton. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
But I actually did it. I actually did the fake Peloton, and I call it the Feliton. And it's been great. You know, it's a fraction of the price, but his podcast has been really, really fantastic. Every episode is packed with, you know, amazing guests sharing really actionable things that improve your life in all facets of life. So it's been a really good one.
Yeah, that is awesome. Great recommendation. Yeah, Chris is a good buddy of mine, and that's unquestionably one of my favorite shows. So yeah, really, really good one.
And a book that's been mentioned a few times recently on your podcast, Die with Zero. That has been a big one as well. The whole reframing of, you know, it's, again, talking about mindful fire, right? It's not about waiting till FI to live your life. As you always say, Brad, there's so many benefits on the path to financial independence just by getting started. And that's really what that book is all about. It's about taking those benefits now, obviously planning for the future, but also taking them now. And one thing that he says in there, you're not going to be able to do everything at every age, right? So if you want to go hike the Inca Trail in Machu Picchu, don't wait till you're 75 years old, because you're not going to be able to do it. You got to do that now. And the same thing goes for, you know, like you said before, Brad, the little things with family. And I know that you're a big fan of the tail end article about how we spend 90% of our time with our parents before we turn 18.
Yeah.
The same goes with our kids. We need to make those memories now, because that's what we're going to have later on. We're not going to be able to get those things back, no matter how much money we have or how much free time we have. So that book, Die with Zero, I feel like I need to listen to that one once a year to remind me.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's funny. There are these like little numbers that just stick in my head, like as just really important ones, just in all aspects of life. And so it's like, the most obvious one is the $100 per month, right? So we always say, if you can cut $100 per month of recurring expenses from your life, that is $30,000 less you need in your FI number. So the math works really simply. That's $1,200 a year times 25 is $30,000. So when people say, oh, little things don't matter, they certainly matter, right? So $30,000. And then from the tail end is essentially, For us as parents, every year of our child's life from 0 to 18 is essentially 5% of all the time we will ever spend with them, right? So that gets you very quickly to that 90%. So, I mean, that is really sobering on the one hand, and you can look at it negatively. But again, what have we been talking about this entire time? It's reframing that to, how can I best use this time and not waste it, right? And I think about that sometimes when my daughter, Anna, it's, you know, I like to go to sleep pretty early, and she's already a night owl, and she, you know, she's a teenager, and she wants to talk to me at 9 o'clock. She would love for me to sit there with her for 2 hours. And I'm like just physically falling asleep sometimes. And I actually, in the moment, and this is where awareness is so important, is in the moment, I've actually said to myself, because of articles and books like you just mentioned, I'm going to look back on this even 5 years from now when she's in college, and I would give anything for her to be sitting on that couch with me, just wanting to talk, anything. And I know, Adam, that's 5 years from now. That's not that far, right? So it's not even like I'm envisioning my 80-year-old self wishing that Anna was still sitting on the couch with me. It's now, and that actually changes my behavior in the moment. And I think that's a super powerful version of that, you know?
Yeah, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. And I've had like a recent experience where I've been reading books to my son, and it's kind of like a good check for me, because I'll be reading the words, but I'm thinking about something completely different, right? So it's an opportunity for me to say, oh, wait, my mind is not here. Let me bring it back and let me truly be here, because, you know, he's not going to want to read books with me forever, right? So it really is a choice. And that's, again, this whole approach to mindful fire is awareness and choice. How do we become aware of our thoughts, what's important to us, what we value? We didn't talk about financial independence too much because you guys have covered it all, but really it's like awareness, like, what am I spending my money on? What is my life cost? What do I value? And then choice. How do I choose what I want and where I want to be spending my time, how I want to be showing up, right? So it's all these little things that we can use to do that.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Adam, question number two, an inflection point in your life that was especially memorable or meaningful. And we might have already talked about it with the envisioning in and out of a job, but I'd love to hear your answer.
Yeah, It was absolutely that moment where I envisioned myself out of a job and used envisioning to survive that into another job. And the reason why that was such an inflection point is because it kicked off this whole new chapter and interest area of my life of mindfulness and ultimately financial independence, right? It started with mindfulness by getting to understand myself and understand the power of envisioning and becoming a facilitator, then starting the podcast and bringing my interest of FIRE into this picture, right? Because for the first several years of my career, I was totally unaware and uninterested in doing anything with my money, mostly out of fear. But my buddy, David Moltz, shout out to David Moltz, he discovered Choose FI. He discovered the 4% rule. And that made it seem doable for me. And I went down the rabbit hole, then brought those ideas together. So this moment that was so difficult really kicked off this huge area of interest. And I really see it continuing. Like the podcast is essentially the foundation for what I want to do in the future, which is teach this to people and help them envision what they want and use mindfulness to connect them with themselves better and to really create a life that they love and make work optional to make it all happen.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, to think of all the positive things that came out of that nearly catastrophic thing. So that is awesome. All right, Adam, question number three, your favorite life hack.
All right, I got one that I don't think has been mentioned on the podcast. Ooh. And that is to start a podcast.
Okay.
You know, it's very meta, right? Like it hasn't been mentioned on the podcast to start a podcast.
Yeah, really.
Here's why I think having a podcast is a life hack. It allows you the opportunity to meet and connect with amazing and interesting people. And yeah, you could reach out to them for no reason, but that is scary for one. And also, you know, there's a million people doing that. But the interesting thing is I've found, and you may have seen something similar, like 95% of the people I invite to a podcast say yes.
Yeah.
Even if no one's listening to my podcast, right? When I had no listeners, people would still say yes. And so having a podcast gives you a reason to reach out to people that gives them something in return. And then they'll say yes, they come on your podcast, you have an opportunity to ask them whatever you want for an hour or so and become friends with them, build a connection, build a relationship, learn from them. And you know, these are people sometimes that you'd have to pay $10,000 to go to one of their workshops or something like that. And they're coming on your podcast and you have their undivided attention. So it's been amazing to figure that out and to see just how many new friends I make just through this whole podcasting thing.
Wow, that is really cool. Yeah, I never would have thought about it like that, like in my own life. But yeah, when you lay it out, when you lay the case out like that, it's pretty clear. Actually, another member of our community who I've known for a bunch of years, he's the head of our like Bay Area or used to be the Stanford Choose FI group or so, or financial independence group or whatnot. But his name is Justin. He has a podcast called Alchemized Life, which is actually really good. I'm going to be on that. Well, actually, by the time this airs, I will have already been on that. And actually, that was a really good like multi-hour episode. And he actually said something very similar. He had the very famous podcaster Jordan Harbinger on his show. And he's like, he was laying out the exact same case, more or less saying between the lines, like, there's no world where I would just be able to call you up and be able to pick your brain about podcasting for an hour. You'd charge me $100,000, but I invite you on my podcast and you come on. And I mean, people don't ask how many downloads do you have or any of that. Like, it's wild. It still is like a very open atmosphere, I'd say. So yeah, I would echo that. That's very cool.
Yeah. And then I'll add one other benefit that I just thought of having a podcast. It's kind of like a verbal journal, right? Mm. Like if you listen back to yourself on the podcast 2 years ago, you'll hear yourself talking about certain things, right? For me, it's like I like talk about envisioning all the time on the podcast because it's like all I can talk about. It's something I love. I listen back and I hear things, I hear myself envisioning out loud to my guests, things I want to do. And then I realize, oh, wow, I've already done that. It's like a verbal journal that you can use. And I actually did one with my dad as well. Oh, I did an episode with my dad. That's another thing I would highly recommend doing. Whether you have a public podcast or not, record a conversation with your parents and ask them about their childhood. Ask them, you know, their hopes and their dreams, their lessons of life, and just record it because you'll have that forever. And so that's a big one.
Yeah. No, that's neat. And I think for a lot of these, you know, podcasts or blogs or whatever, you're not doing it for the money. You're not doing it for fame. I mean, the 999 out of 1,000 are essentially never going to be read or listened to by more than a handful of people. So, I mean, to do it for that reason is silly. But as you're highlighting, there are all of these just amazing, amazing ancillary benefits. I hate to even call it ancillary because it's not. I mean, just the sheer fact of it being a journal or being an audio journal, that in and of itself is maybe reason to do it. And it costs virtually nothing to put together a podcast or a blog. So yeah, that's really cool. I never would have thought about it that overtly, but I like that. All right, Adam, let's move on to question number 4, your biggest financial mistake.
All right, I got 2 for this one. I got one that happened and one that almost happened. So the one that happened, you know, my biggest financial mistake is all about buying individual stocks, you know, thinking I'm smart enough to outperform the market. It's not going to happen. And anytime I've tried to do it, even when it went well, like I bought some tech stock and it went up, you know, and I still believe in the business, but it went up. And guess what? I didn't sell.
Yeah.
And guess what happened after, you know, a couple of years of the pandemic? It came right back down. I bought it for 25, went up to 400, thought I was a genius. Now it's at 67. So that's the problem with buying individual stocks. You got to be right twice.
Yeah.
You got to be right when you buy and you got to be right when you sell. So that's the biggest one that actually happened. The other one is when in the middle of this job search, when I envisioned myself out of a job, I started my side hustle in there and I had an amazing day where I was talking to this potential client and I got him to agree to pay me $10,000 up front. And I thought, I've made it. This is it. I come home to my wife. I say, I don't need to find a job. I'm just going to do this. I'm going all in on entrepreneurship. I got $10,000. And she's like, are you insane? You can't live in San Francisco for $10,000, you know? And I was like, huh, she's right. I mean, I didn't appreciate it so much in the moment, but I, looking back, that decision for her to say, do that on the side. It's fine. Do it on the side. Find a job. Stay at Google. That decision alone has been worth hundreds of thousands of dollars because I was able to find another job and my salary has doubled since then. And also, I was able to build a 6-figure side hustle, which, you know, might have been a whole different experience if it was what I was relying on to put food on the table.
Yeah.
So glad that one didn't happen and very grateful to my very wise wife for talking some sense into me.
Yeah, that's some wisdom indeed. Wow, very cool. All right, let's. I want to pepper in one of my kind of new questions here. So I'm not sure if you and your wife use credit card rewards points for travel rewards, but if you do, do you have any success that you would like to highlight? And if you don't, talk about like a goal travel destination, like what's on your bucket list?
Yeah, we definitely use credit card rewards. I would say not as effectively as we could or as your guests and you have talked about, but, you know, definitely try to take advantage of it and, you know, have had several trips to Europe. We did a trip to Portugal and Barcelona one year. We did another trip to Croatia and Italy another year.
Sounds like you're doing okay, Adam. Let's be clear here.
Pretty much the flights were covered.
Nice.
The, you know, Airbnb was generally what we did in those situations. So we're doing okay. Dream destination that's been on my mind recently is I want to go on a safari. You know, I've always wanted to go on a safari and I don't know much more than that. You know, I don't have any plans. I have a 3-year-old and a 2-month-old. It's probably not in the near future, but you know, I would love to put that out there and make that happen sooner rather than later.
Nice. Sounds like a plan. That's very cool. All right, let's go with what we used to call our bonus question. So this will be the last one. What purchase have you made in, I don't know, the last year or so that has added the most value to your life?
What purchase have I made?
Or just anything, any kind of splurge or just anything you've bought. I think, unfortunately, in the FI community, sometimes, and we've done everything we can to dispel this myth, but we think about cutting and taking things out, but sometimes adding something in or doing something unexpected with your money has just added a ton of value.
Yeah. You know, when you say the word splurge, I'd say like this house that I bought, you know, I was coming from San Francisco where you buy a $1.5 million shack
Yeah.
Right. So I had no perception of what a house would actually cost. And so when I moved over here to New Jersey during the pandemic, we stayed with my in-laws for a few months. We started looking at houses and I just happened to come into this house. You know, I'll save you the long envisioning story, but I did envision this house as well. It's always been my dream to design and build my own house. And this room that we're in, which is our sunroom with the peaked roof and the windows and the deck outside, is exactly what I envisioned for this house. And I have drawings to show that when I thought about this.
And to be clear, you did not build this. You purchased this.
I didn't even need to build it. I looked at like 10 houses and I walked into this house 10 days after I started looking for houses. Somehow it was on the market for 90 days at that point, and we were able to buy it. And, you know, I call it a splurge because it was more than I was hoping to spend, but that's because what I was hoping to spend was completely arbitrary. I had no idea I had no conception of what things cost. And so having this home, I spent so much time in this room. I walked into this room and knew right away, this is the house for us. And, you know, we have a beautiful backyard and we play with my son outside. It's just been totally wonderful. And it's 15 minutes from the beach where we go all the time. So it's just been such a wonderful blessing for us and crazy that I envisioned it.
Yeah, that is wild. And yeah, what a perfect, perfect answer to what has brought the most value to your life. That's brilliant. Adam, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely a pleasure. And you know, I know, Brad, you always say that none of this matters if we don't take action, right? So we talked about a lot today. We talked about mindfulness. We talked about meditation. We talked about envisioning, obviously all within the lens of financial independence. Don't just let this be another podcast that you listen to and forget about. I invite you to take one moment after you listen to this, before you jump into whatever you're going to do or your next podcast, think about what's one thing I want to do. Maybe it's meditating for 2 minutes. Maybe it's envisioning your big dream life. And I invite you to go to mindfulfire.org/choosefi, where I'll have the full list of things we discussed, all the practices and the tools and my short guided meditation and my envisioning guide. And just pick something and get started with it to improve your life and start living that dream life right now.
Damn, no better way to end than that. Adam, thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show and for being part of the Choosify community. If you haven't already, the best ways to get involved are, first, subscribe to the podcast. So you're listening to this on a podcast player, just hit subscribe. And then subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I actually sit down every Monday and write this by hand, and I send it out Tuesday morning. So just head over to choosefi.com/subscribe. And it's really, really easy to get on the newsletter list right there. And I would greatly appreciate it. It's the best way to get in touch with me. You can actually just hit reply to any of those emails, and it comes directly to my inbox. So that's the way that I keep a pulse of the community and how we keep this the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. And finally, if you're looking to join an in real life community, we have Choosify local groups in 300 plus cities all around the world. So head to choosify.com/local, and you'll find a list of all of those cities in 20 plus countries all across the world. And if you're just getting started with FI, or you have a family member or a friend who you think would be interested, two easy ways. Choosify episode 100 is kind of our welcome to the FI community. And even though it's a couple years old at this point, it still stands up. And it's a really great just starting point to get an understanding of what is financial independence? What are we doing here? Why are we looking to live a more intentional life where we save money and use it as a springboard to live a better life? And then Choosify created a Financial Independence 101 course that's entirely free. Just head to choosify.com/FI101. And again, thanks for listening.